Joined on the line now by Ethan Book, the owner of New England. Ethan will be back on. I mean, he's the owner of New England Limo. He's a former banker and a four-time candidate for the 128th District. He is one of three Republicans vying for the nomination against Democratic Congressman Jim Himes for the 4th District seat that Himes has held since 2009. Ethan, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Joe. It's a pleasure to be back.
All right. You came on last week, and again, just in fairness, I, like I said, I wanted you to call back so we could have a proper conversation. We could go through and look at what your campaign is. You have a couple of competitors in the Republican Party who I think are also sort of taking a slightly different approach. And just so you know, Ethan, again, for fairness sake, I did reach out to Congressman Himes' office and offered him the same opportunity. So I appreciate you sent me a lot of information. Ethan, I've been reading a lot about you over the last couple of days. Your campaign slogan is a return to order. You say that you see a swing here from liberal to more conservative, from Democrat really to Republican. Looking at the numbers of your races in the 128th District, you made strides every single time you ran. Is that part of what you're talking about? Do you think the state is slowly shifting back the other way?
Okay, yes. That is part, well, it's both. First of all, with what I've been seeing in the 128th District, yes, I ran four times in the 128th District, central portion of Bridgeport, a highly dominant Democrat area. First time I ran in 2014, the Democrat to Republican ratio was over 20-1. When I run, I'm active. I knock on doors. I send flyers. I've gotten state funding 3 out of 4 times. With largely for voter registrations that I've brought in, by 2020, the last time that I ran, the Democrat vote to Republican voter ratio was down below 13-1. That's a 35% reduction in a blue area, dominant Democrat area, at a time when people were not expecting this kind of a shift. Then add to that, there is a shift from more liberal Democrat to more conservative Republican, in part because of a lot of people's disappointment of the current presidential administration.
Okay. You are a big infrastructure guy. Is that right? And I think one of the things, Ethan, that you're looking to focus on too is the idea of standalone bills. You know, there was this bill that passed in Congress, and Chris Murphy suggested that 12 Republicans were anti-Ukraine, even though only 1% of the bill was Ukrainian aid. We know a lot of these bills are packed with pork, and of course it puts legislators in a position where they cannot support a certain bill. You're looking at what? Is infrastructure something you would vote on? Is that something that you think that this country needs?
I believe our country needs infrastructure. Infrastructure development is not a big part, express part that I've emphasized in my campaign, but certainly I support good infrastructure. But I like the term that you use, standalone. A lot of what's been coming across, and I would say that for the current administration, as well as the previous administration, there were a lot of things added in stimulus bills, in development bills, that was not totally focused on what those bills were intended.
Yeah, I unfortunately think that's just a big part of politics, and I don't know that we're ever going to do anything differently about that. You know what I mean? That's baked into the cake.
Okay. To an extent, I might agree with you. However, the political figures and the public need to be aware of how precarious our financial situation is. Our national debt to GDP is now 1.33 to 1. Some economists say that we are bankrupt. Others say that we are near bankrupt. Most people are not well aware of how serious our financial situation is, which means that everybody needs to be taking a much closer look at these bills and what's in them.
Well, and I definitely think that's a serious issue, and people should be able to rely on radio stations like this one to tell them what's happening and what is what, and right, without pushing an agenda. Because at the end of the day, look, these infrastructure bills, COVID relief bills, it's for everybody. It's not for one side or the other. And I think people sort of have to get over themselves. Now, listen, Ethan, of the three Republicans running for the 4th District nomination, you are clearly the most conservative of the group. Would you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
Okay.
And that's something that I tout. I think that's good. I think that's necessary. I think that's important. I think that needs to be understood.
So last week I was saying, and I think that's part of what the reason you called in, half of the state is Democrats or left-leaning voters. 32% are conservative, 18% are independent. Do you think pushing a hard right, I don't want to say right-wing view, but a hard right view on things like Planned Parenthood, things like Roe v. Wade, things like Obergefell versus Hodges, do you think that that's going to play well in this state?
Well, I think it can play well when presented right. My positions, first of all, I believe that they are legally sound. And a lot of people, when they talk about these issues, don't want to talk about the legalities of them. They just want to talk about the social or political or their wants. Well, that can be fine. That can be part of the discussion. But we need to talk about legal aspects and even spiritual aspects. I have positions which I believe are rational and compassionate. And yes, when I go out and discuss them, sometimes I get controversy, get objection. But that's precisely the conversation that needs to be held.
I could not agree with you more, Ethan. I like having these conversations, and I like that people have different viewpoints. And I think that when we share our different viewpoints, it helps us to understand each other as human beings. And I've just never been the kind of person, and you strike me as one as similar to this. We can have different opinions on things. We could still be rational and kind and you know, speak as two intelligent adults.
Agreed. Actually, when we spoke last week, I gave you my 4 points of basic Republican ideology.
Yep.
Could I do that briefly and then focus on the point that Republicans tend to be conservative on social policies, just to expand a little bit on what we just discussed?
Yes. Yeah, so, Ethan, here's what we're going to do. Take a quick weather and traffic. Yeah. We'll come back on the other side, and you could drop your 4 points right after this here on WICC 600 AM. 107.3 FM. We'll be right back. I am Joe Aguirre in for Paul Pacelli. We are on the line with one of the three Republican contenders for the 4th District nomination to challenge Jim Himes this fall. Ethan Buck, he's the owner of New England Limousine in Fairfield. And as promised, he's going to deliver us his 4 points of reaffirmation on Republican ideology. Ethan, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Joe.
You're welcome.
Yes, and this came about in my 2020 campaign for state rep. As I was going about to the voters in the 128th district, central portion of Bridgeport, and I would say that I'm Republican candidate for state rep, I got the impression that a lot of people weren't really understanding what that meant. And so I went about to define key points of Republican, basic Republican ideology. And the 4 points that I got were: Republicans tend to be conservative on budget and taxing matters, tend to be conservative on social policies, tend to have adherence to principles of a constitutional republic where there is the rule of law, and affirmation that we are a Judeo-Christian nation. These are basic points of Republican ideology. since we have discussed here briefly, Joe, my position on social policies, I'd just like to explain briefly one point of why I am pro-life. That is, I oppose abortion. When I ran for the U.S. Senate in 2010, there was attention to that issue, the pro-life versus abortion or choice. And I read Roe versus Wade. I got some ideas. I read various commentaries, and I came up with a six-page critique, which is at my website. And one of the points I'll explain here, the Supreme Court in that decision said that we think there's a privacy right for a woman to consider an abortion in the 14th Amendment. If not, it's in the 9th Amendment. Well, now these are our Supreme Court justices, and the 14th Amendment would not apply for such a privacy right because that deals with municipal and state government action. Well, a decision between a woman and her physician is not state and government action. Rather, if it's there at all, it's in the 9th Amendment. Now, in considering a privacy right, the court said there is no absolute privacy right. That's correct. In every case that I've reviewed that considers privacy right, there's always a broader context. Now, with respect to abortion, however, the Supreme Court deemed that up until the beginning of the third trimester, a woman had a right to consider solely a decision for an abortion. I say what the court missed was consideration of the privacy right of the father and the fetus. As soon as you put these factors in place, it changes the equation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it certainly would. That's going to be a tough sell, I feel like, Ethan. I see where you're coming from, and I hear that argument a lot. You know, the rights of the fetus, the rights of the father. I don't know if that would ever supersede the right of the woman. You know, there. Well, it would be. I don't see a scenario where that you could really encompass all that.
Well, then in that instance, the privacy right would be absolute, and there's no broader context. There's no case, Fair. Other case that I've seen where that's the case. But then there are other factors to consider as well. Look at the history of ancient Jews, ancient Israel, where they were having problems right before the destruction of Israel, of Jerusalem, of child sacrifice and sexual perversion. These were the national collective sins. And according to scripture, God warned Israel, you better clean up your act or I'll take my hand of protection away from you and you will be invaded. Well, they didn't clean up their act and they were invaded. There's a book called The Harbinger by Jonathan Cahn, which lays out parallels of ancient Jewish history with our current events to show that there are very specific parallels where the suggestion is, and I think it's credible, that recent events are warnings of God giving our nation that if we don't clean up our act, a parallel of this child sacrifice, I believe, is the abortion, then he will take away his hand of protection and we will be invaded. Our nation is in a precarious situation. This is where I bring in what I call the spiritual consideration of the issue.
Book for Congress 2022.org is Ethan's book's website. I do suggest you get a very nice website, by the way. I just saw a quote here from Ronald Reagan, too, that I really like. I want to ask you a couple of questions, if I could.
Yes.
You can feel free to expound on your answer a little bit, but these are more or less yes, no questions. Did Joe Biden shut down or reduce oil production in this country?
Hey, listen, I'm up on that. I heard you last week.
All right, so you know, you're on the same page as me.
I want to ask. Apparently, the public opinion is he did, but the data doesn't support it.
Yes.
Hey, I'm with you in that kind of review, Joe.
That's an acceptable answer. Yes, the people think he did, but we know he didn't. All right, I want to ask you this. Do you think we need a wall between the U.S.-Mexican border? There's no wrong answers here, by the way, Ethan. I'm just trying to gauge.
Okay. Okay, first of all, we have a border crisis where, where there is no way that we should have open borders, which is basically what we have. That goes against everything, the laws, the intent of border policy, and what essentially every other nation in the world is doing. So do we need a change of that? Yes. Would a border wall help? I believe it would. You know, I think that's a practical solution to the problem.
Ethan,
to get control.
I'll tell you, I'm all for locking that border down. I think we could do better than a wall. I'd like to see either more manpower or maybe more aerial stuff. Again, I'm just curious where you're at. Was January 6th a coup attempt?
Okay.
A poor one at that, but a coup attempt. What, you think that?
Yeah, what's the question, Joe?
That's the subject.
What's the question?
Right. Let me go to this one. Do you think COVID was man-made in a Chinese lab?
I think the evidence is strong that it was man-made in a Chinese lab.
Okay.
Am I going to make a conclusion? No. Am I going to say the evidence is strong? Yes.
Fair enough. Last question. Who won the 2020 presidential election?
Another good question. Am I going to say that it was lost by Trump for voter fraud? Not necessarily. However, I think it was heavily influenced improperly by the social media, even by Jim Hines talking about persistently the Trump-Russia collusion, by social media and mainstream media, by blocking the information regarding the Hunter Biden laptop. I think, oh, and also by the Zuckerbucks that went to various states.
Yeah,
I think it was influenced. And do I think that there was probably an erroneous result because of those influence? Yeah, I think there was. Am I going to say it was fraud? No.
Awesome. Ethan, I really appreciate your time. We'll definitely have you back on here as we get a little bit closer to Election Day. Again, everybody, bookforcongress2022.org. You did well on that test. I appreciate it. And again, I don't think that for any of those questions there is a definitive answer one way or the other. Again, just kind of looking to see where you were at. I wanted to make sure, Ethan, above all, that you were a sane, reasonable person, and I feel pretty good about you.
Hey, can I just add one quick quote?
Go ahead.
Okay. This is from Ronald Reagan. America stands on four main values: faith in God, freedom of speech, family, and economic freedom. If fascism ever comes to America, it will come in the name of liberalism. Thank you, and God bless you.
Ethan Book, one of the three Republicans who's running for the 4th District nomination. Ethan, good luck to you. Let's stay in touch. And like I said, we'll talk to you again as we get a little bit closer to the election.
Absolutely. Thank you, Joe.
You're very welcome. Now joining me on the line, Tom Hine, the CEO and principal of Capital Wealth Management, LLC. He's an advisor with Commonwealth Financial Network, has over 20 years of experience advising clients. Tom, thanks for joining us. In addition to being a financial advisor, you're also a fourth-degree black belt, and we're going to get to that in a minute because there's a bigger picture here to what you're doing. Your Succession Fit podcast, which is available wherever you download podcasts, it focuses on not trying to not getting clients or working the financial planning aspect of it, but Succession Fit, Tom, exactly what it says.
Yeah. Thanks very much, Joe, and I'm excited to share with you all the different ways. But the main focus here on Succession Fit and my wealth management practice is really health and wellness. And I've been looking at this for over 20 years, you know, as a practicing planner, and I realize that for my focus moving forward in the team, we certainly want to help clients achieve their financial goals, but equally important, if not more, is this health and wellness balance that I think is lacking. And I think over the last 2 years, we all were, you know, pressed to our maximum to try to maintain the best health and wellness that we could, given everything going on.
I love the fact that you know, in addition to talking about obviously the whole wealth management aspect of it, you being a fourth degree black belt and you've competed internationally, one of the things you've talked about with some of your guests is the idea of you save money, you plan for your retirement, What happens if you're not taking care of yourself and then you drop dead? Then it's
exactly.
All for naught.
Right. And in fact, you know, the working title of my next book is going to be What Good is a Seven-Figure Portfolio If You're 6 Feet Under? Right?
Yep.
I mean, the point is we all work so hard. And the idea is along the way, I want everyone, whether you're in your 20s, you know, 30s or older, as we're all working so hard at whatever it is that we do every day, I want you to be mindful that with the tools and technologies out there, and of course with the right, you know, the right resources on the internet, there's a lot more we can do as individuals to be, I like to say, you know, CEO of our own personal health, so we can be making more intelligent decisions along the way and not end up like that client that works for 30 years, retires, you know, and drops dead of a very preventable disease. And just to let the listeners know, I'm not, you know, I'm not an MD, I'm not in medicine. But I do watch what happens to the wealth management landscape and what clients do with their money in retirement. And sometimes they spend way too much of it, you know, running to doctor's offices where maybe, and I underline the word maybe, you know, 5 or 10 years before that, with a lot of good planning, they could have mitigated some of those situations.
Yeah, absolutely. It's capitalwm.com/secessionfit-podcast if you want to suggest a guest or a topic. You can also reach out to Tom on LinkedIn. He is at linkedin.com/in/HeinTom. Tom, we got to take a quick break. We're going to come back on the other side, and I want to talk to you a little bit about what this podcast is about, specifically focused on secession, because we've talked a lot, you and I, about secession planning and how important that is. We'll be joined by Tom Hein right after a quick look at traffic and weather here on Connecticut Today on WICC 600 and 107.3 FM. Good afternoon. I'm Chet McGuire in for Paul Pacelli, joined by Tom Hein, CEO and principal of Capital Wealth Management, LLC, and an advisor with Commonwealth Financial Network. He is also the host of the Secession Fit podcast. He's also a fourth-degree black belt and a very cool person. Again, Tom, thanks so much for joining us today. A big part of what your podcast is about is, again, the idea that, be it financial planners or financial advisors, small business owners, looking to go to the next stage of their business, maybe an exit plan, maybe growth strategies. These are all sorts of the things that you talk about, preparing your company for sales and mergers, and just overall protecting both their health and their wealth. So let's talk succession planning, what that is, how that's different from the other plans. Kind of get into that a little bit, Tom.
Sure. Thanks, Joe. So I'd like to distinguish for the audience two really key terms, succession planning versus continuity planning. And by the way, whether you're a contractor, you know, whether you're in plumbing, manufacturing, sales, or service, these general rules I'm going to talk about apply to all your businesses, really. They might apply at different times and at different scales, but they certainly apply to all of you out there. So when I look at the two terms, continuity and succession planning, think of continuity planning is break glass in case of emergency. In other words, God forbid you don't come home one night, something happens, a bad accident. Who takes over your clients? You know, if you're a manufacturing business, who takes over the staff? You know, who runs it from that point on? Who's your designated successor? Or if you're in sales or service, right, and you have a list of clients that you work in. So the continuity plan, we call typically a one- or two-pager, is, again, break glass in case of emergency. You didn't plan on dying. Something happened, but somebody has to step in, and really for the benefit of your family, your spouse, you know, your partner, whatever, make that thing run, you know, to create the income stream. Versus a succession plan is a well thought out, typically, you know, 3 to 5 year or longer plan that's in writing, where you're actively grooming or working on grooming the next generation, what they call G2 in parlance and financial services. So those are the two big distinguishing things I want to make sure the audience hears.
Yeah, continuity. That was the word I could not think of, again, as you refer to as an emergency situation. Tom, there's two points that you had also made in the past. Number one, that men and women are doing their succession planning differently. Can you address that a little bit? And explain,
absolutely,
obviously, why the women are doing it way better as always.
Yeah, for the ladies listening today, congratulations. My experience, again, primarily through the lens of a financial advisor, but I have clients in all different walks of life. I've found, again, in the 30 years of being an advisor and the 20 years of doing acquisitions, that women tend to intuitively get it right. They know there's a point in their career where they're not afraid to walk away and have a game plan. And while they still love their clients and they still connect with them, they want to be able to have a game plan to walk away while they're healthy, younger, and can enjoy those hardworking years. Whereas, sad to say, guys, in general, we as a race, right, or species, we hold on too long. Sometimes we, quote, you know, die with our boots on, meaning we keep working and working without a game plan. And, you know, Einstein is credited with saying the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. So we want to make sure that people don't just create this company and keep growing it without the game plan to exit. And it seems to me, and again, in my research and my actual working with female advisors, they tend to get it right sooner than men.
I think you had told me somewhere along the lines, as far as people who have succession plans in place, it's a really low percentage. Is that correct?
That is correct. Sadly, and again, I don't know every industry, but I'm going to bet it's probably similar, like, to the percentage of people that have wills, right? We know everybody of a certain age should have a will, but nobody wants to get one because it's not a fun thing to think about. Less than 20%, in some cases, less than 15%, of financial advisors across the country have a well-written or written-out succession plan or even a continuity plan. So that's a staggering low number, given the fact that financial advisors, you know, whether you're here, whether you're Des Moines, Iowa, you know, whether you're Orange County, California, we generally giving advice to lots and lots of people, helping affect their lives in a positive way, but we often are like the shoemaker's kids, you know, we forget to take care of ourselves and our own family.
It really is easy to sort of fall into that. This podcast that you do is excellent, Succession Fit Podcast. It's available wherever you download podcasts. As I mentioned, you can also visit capitalwm.com/succession-fit-podcast. Highly recommended. Tom, you're great at what you do. I've been telling you since I met you, you should have been a television host because you are really good. You really know your stuff, and I really appreciate you giving us some time today to talk about how important succession planning is and how important it is to take your health seriously. When are you starting the new book, or is that already in the works?
Yeah, thank you for asking. It's and this is designed, basically, this book is for any age group. So this is not about, you know, I'm not lecturing people. I'm not making them feel bad. What I'm sharing with them is at any age, you really want to put more emphasis on your health and wellness than maybe we're used to as a society. Meaning, you know, when I grew up, and I think most listeners, you go to your doctor once a year. I think physicians in general do a great job, but they're only seeing you one day a year, right? And generally, and the good news was you only want to go to them once a year and get that clean bill of health. Now, what we're suggesting, and research shows this, people want to have a more proactive view and proactive nature on their health and wellness to be able to check in and see how they're doing, you know, toward their wellness goals, you know, whether it's cholesterol numbers or, you know, blood pressure, all these things that the doctors would tell you are important things to know. But rather than waiting till people are 40, 45, or 50, they can start earlier in life. And then secondly, again, because of the things I'll discuss in the book, the tools and techniques that are out there available to the public and the research out there is fascinating to give them, that is the individual, a lot more power and control over their own health future. Instead of waiting for something to happen, they can be proactive and take that first step. So it's exciting. A lot of great things out there that I'll be discussing in that book, because I want to empower people to take control, you know, with the help of these, their qualified physicians, take control of your own health and really march it forward to a much better level.
You also covered that quite a bit in your last two episodes of the Secession Fit podcast, again, available wherever you download podcasts. Highly advise you check that out. Tom, the name of your first book, The Zen Master, is that right?
Yeah, it was The Zen of Business Acquisitions.
There we go.
That's the one. Yeah, that's the one where I discussed the martial arts and how, you know, the philosophy there when I started buying companies, you know, nearly 20 years ago, was that I didn't realize how much the martial arts I had learned from some of the world's best instructors, including, by the way, my first instructor, whose last tournament in the late 60s, early 70s, was against the team that Chuck Norris was on. So he didn't fight Chuck Norris directly, but his team from the East Coast, you know, fought against the famous Chuck Norris team from the West Coast. So if that dates me to your listeners, that's how long I've been involved in martial arts.
That is very cool. Tom Hine, CEO and principal, Capital Wealth Management, again, host of the Secession Fit podcast. Tom, appreciate you having us on. We'll have you again in the future to talk more about succession planning and how important it is. So much appreciated. Joined on the phone by Nia Chung Sredosky, an attorney with offices in Hartford and Glastonbury, NCS Probate Law. Nia, thanks so much for joining us. Got a lot of questions for you.
Thanks for having me, Joe.
Of course. All right, Nia, first and foremost, because you did mine. Let me just get this out of the way. You did wills and trusts and all that stuff for my wife and I a few months ago. And as you remember, during our initial consultation, my wife's an attorney. You guys were more or less on the same page. I didn't know anything. What exactly is estate planning? What is, and then we'll kind of break down probate and trust and living wills and all that.
Well, first of all, Joe, I think we should give you more credit than that.
But thank you.
That was a nice way of complimenting your wife. I appreciate that. So I do estate planning and probate work, which is, you know, will, trust, and going to probate court to administer the probate estate of a decedent. So I kind of do everything from the life of the testator and all the way to after the death of that person, making sure that that person's beneficiaries receive the distributions that the beneficiaries are entitled to.
What happens if someone in Connecticut dies and they don't have a will? What does that process look like? Because you're going to probate, obviously.
Right. So, a common misconception is that people think that if they have a will, then they will avoid probate. That's not the case. Even if you have a will, you will still have to get the will probated in order for the decedent's estate to be distributed to the beneficiaries. But if you don't have a will, what will happen is the process is a little bit different, and the way the courts will decide who gets what is determined by the laws of intestacy, which are the Connecticut state laws, instead of what the grantor or the testator wanted to do in his or her will.
So can you sell a property before probate?
You can sell a decedent's real property during the probate process as long as you are the fiduciary of the estate. So by fiduciary, I mean you're the administrator or the executor of the estate, and you have the authority to sell, lease, rent, you know, purchase real property. So if you are the fiduciary and you have the fiduciary certificate with you and you want to sell the property before the probate process is completely over, what you would have to do is you would have to get what's called a certificate releasing liens from the court, because whenever there is real property involved with the decedent, there's an inchoate lien put on that real property by the state. And in order for the property to be sold free and clear of title, the estate tax, the Connecticut states the probate court would have to say that there is no estate tax due and release that lien from the real property.
How much does it cost to go through probate? Because there's a fee, right, to go through probate?
Right. So the probate court fee depends on the size of the estate. So obviously if the estate is larger, then the probate court fees will be higher. So there's a website that you can go to that really in detail lays out what all the fees are. It's on the Connecticut Probate Court website. And there's also a calculator that you can put in the numbers of the decedent's estate value, the gross estate, how much the surviving spouse is getting, if any, and then come up with a more exact number. But you should also keep in mind that not only are there probate court fees, but there are also there's filing fees, attorney's fees, and other kind of administrative fees that are involved. So it does get quite a bit expensive if the estate is larger, obviously. But also if it's a modest estate, you know, you're still looking at an attorney fee of about, you know, at least $3,000. So I would recommend, you know, having an estate plan in place to the extent possible while you are alive so that your wishes are, you know, fulfilled after you die.
Now, you said earlier, Nia, that there's no avoiding probate. There's being, I guess the better way to look at it is there's being prepared and ready for probate, and then there's being unprepared for probate by not having wills and trusts and stuff like that, right?
That's a one way to put it. Yeah. So if you have a will, you know, you can rest assured, you know, your beneficiary designation is the way you want your estate to be divided. You know, let's say you have a child and you're remarried and your new spouse has two children. And let's say that, you know, your spouse died before you and he didn't leave a will. You know, the way that the laws of intestacy work is a certain sum will go to the surviving spouse, and then the rest of it will get split amongst the children. So that surviving spouse's child will be left out of it, even if, you know, the spouse, you know, treated all three of them equally. So you will be rest assured that if you leave a will, that all three of those kids will be taken care of. But you're right. You won't avoid probate. You will still have to get that probated. If the goal is to avoid probate, then that's when, you know, I would start recommending trust. And that's kind of what I do. So there are, you know, living trusts, there are revocable, there are irrevocable trusts. It gets, once we start talking about what kind of assets you have and what kind of assets you want to protect, you know, it can get quite complicated. So I won't go into too much detail about that here. But if you want to, you know, limit the amount of time your beneficiaries or your fiduciaries have to go through the probate process, then, you know, having a trust would be a good idea.
And again, I think people really need to understand that, right, this having a will, doing estate planning, that's not just for the wealthy. I mean, they definitely should do it. This is the kind of thing, though, if you want to protect the things that you've accumulated in your life, even if it's not a lot of stuff or even if it's not super nice stuff, you really do need to protect yourself.
That's right. I totally agree with that. And it doesn't matter the size of your estate. Even if you just owned one home and that was all you had when you passed, your children will still have to probate that. You know, if you had a house and two bank accounts, but they were solely owned in your name only, you had no joint owners, then, you know, that will have to be probated. Even if you did have joint owners, if it was just a convenience account and you were really the only one contributing to that account, it would still have to be probated. So, you know, I think that depending on the person's goals, if they are, you know, they want to make sure that their beneficiaries, children, grandchildren, relatives, friends, even, or even a charity, you know, even if they want to leave some certain sum to a charity that they love, and make sure that that is taken place after their death, having at the very least a will is imperative.
We are on the phone with Nia Chung-Sradosky, an attorney who handles probate and estate planning. She has offices in Hartford and in Glastonbury. NCSprobatelaw.com is the website. Nia, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we've talked about this. I thought wills and trusts were basically the same thing. I'm going to ask you to just sort of explain some of the different kinds of trusts that are available to people. Because, again, I think this is information. According to some polls I heard about earlier today, these are things people don't talk about and they don't like to ask. So we'll take a quick break. More with Nia Chung-Sradosky on Connecticut Today on WICC 600 AM and 107.3 FM. I am Joe Aguirre in for Paul Pacelli, joined on the phone by Nia Chung-Sradosky, an attorney with offices in Hartford and Glastonbury, NCS Probate Law. She handles estate planning. Nia, thank you so much for giving us some time today. On your website, ncsestateprobatelaw.com, you actually have, this is really cool, I just saw this, the estate planning myths and misconceptions. My mom's been texting me a bunch of questions, and I just told her to go check out your website. But one of those things, before we talk about trust, is if you jointly own stuff with your spouse or even with a child, that still has to go through probate when you pass, even though, right, with some of that, it automatically transfers to them. But, again, still not out of the water. The state's pretty much always going to kind of be in your business.
There are some accounts that do pass outside of probate, so they're called non-probate assets. And as you aptly mentioned, it is a joint asset. However, the exception is if the asset is only there added and has an added owner just for the convenience of avoiding probate, such as this, exactly what we're talking about, and the only person that contributes to that account, you know, meaning deposits money into it, is the person that later dies, the court is going to call that what is called a convenience account. So it's just, it's just a fake account that's jointly owned. Even though it is actually jointly owned, the only person that contributed to it was the person, the decedent, and that person, the co-owner, would still have to go to probate to, basically prove that it is a joint asset, or they would have to probate it and wait till the probate process is over in order for them to receive those distributions from that asset.
All right. So, again, I was struggling with trust and living trusts and wills and what the difference between those is. Is having a living trust better than having a will, or should you have both of those things? What's the best course of action?
So the benefit of a trust is that you do avoid much of the probate process. You still have to go through probate for a couple of items, and you still have to file an estate tax return. But it's not as a long process, not as, kind of intrusive. One of the things that my clients, really like about having a trust is that they have privacy. So when you file something in probate, with the exception of some confidential information, like the 706 estate tax return is confidential, but, other items like the inventory of all of the assets that the decedent owned when they died, any other kind of filings that are made to the probate court, those are all public documents. So anyone can go to the probate court and view them. And if you have a trust, however, that's a completely private document. The only person that should, really have access to that document is the trustee or trustees. And so, that's a real benefit of having the trust. And also, it does prevent a lot of the emotional impact that happens to beneficiaries when, a loved one passes and they have to go through probate and, they have to file all this paperwork and, just wait for the court to, give them basically the green light to get the distributions. It does take a long time, and for some people it doesn't really impact their day-to-day life too much, because some of them are self-sustaining, and they have, you know, jobs, and, you know, they're just kind of going on, you know, doing their normal business. But for a lot of people who was a very close family member or loved one, it does impact a lot of, you know, kind of their daily life. And so in that sense, you know, having a trust is more beneficial.
When I first met you and you asked me if I had a will, I told you my lawyer wife and I had been literally talking for about 10 years about going and getting one. And obviously, my wife being an attorney, she knows attorneys. And as well-intentioned as we are, we just never got around to doing it. Maybe because we were in our mid-30s, now we're in our mid-40s, when suddenly the realization of, like, we got to do this already. Estate planning is so important. Again, once you've passed, especially because the burden falls on your loved ones who are dealing enough with your grief, you know, they don't need anything else added to it. Peace of mind for you and your family. That's kind of your motto, Nia. And it's definitely feels better knowing now that all of my stuff is covered, and that if God forbid anything should ever happen to my wife and I, that my everything's in order. And I think that's all anybody can ask for. NCSEstateProbateLaw.com is the website. Nia Chung-Swerdlowski, I really appreciate you coming and spending a few minutes with us today talking about wills, probates, and trusts.
Thank you, Joe. It was a pleasure.
Awesome. Joined on the line by a former conservative talk radio host. He also ran against Donald Trump in the 2020 presidential primary. He represented Illinois in the House of Representatives. A one-time moderate Republican, became more of a conservative and then a Tea Party activist. Joe Walsh, thank you for joining us. Where are you at now politically?
Hey, Joe, that's a great question. It's good to be with you. I'm homeless, man. I left the Republican Party 2 years ago. I'm not a Democrat. I think I'm like a lot of people, certainly a lot of conservatives. I'm homeless right now.
Yeah, Joe, I'm very much in this book. And as I told you when I reached out to you, this radio station leans more to the right than the left. And I've said some things. Yeah. I consider myself a common sense Republican. I know Biden won the 2020 election. I know January 6th was an insurrection. I don't need the talking points, and I hate that stuff. Like, and I think you're at that point too. Again, you went from being a moderate to being very conservative. I've been following you on Twitter, by the way, for a really long time. I've always felt like, even in your most conservative days, you always seem like a very reasonable guy, Joe. And yeah. I think that's all anybody can ask for when it comes to being a talk show host or being a politician is just give me the straight talk. And we can't do that anymore in this country. It drives me nuts.
Well, we can't do that. And my former political party refuses to do that. I mean, let's be real. Donald Trump lies every time he opens his mouth. He's the leader of the Republican Party. You just said, Joe, rightly, that Joe Biden won the 2020 election. 70-80% of Republican voters don't believe that. This is a real problem.
I've come on this station this week and I've laid out the facts that, you know, Joe Biden hasn't reduced oil production. That seems to be a thing that everybody believes. And the other big one is, I've read a lot of articles, and I've even seen a poll where even as many as 39% of Democrats think some of Biden's policies are hurting our economy. Every article I read, and I put the question out there last week, no one's taking me up on this. What are the harmful policies that Joe Biden has put into place? Nobody seems to know which ones they are. The job numbers and the GDP look like they're moving in the right direction. So whatever these destructive policies are, again, this ends up being just the right-wing media pounding this into the head, Joe, of people who want to believe it and will be quick to believe it and won't look any of that up. That's what we're facing.
So before I came out 4 years ago and publicly opposed Trump, I was a big part of that right-wing media. I was on 200 talk radio stations around the country. I was on Fox News every day. And you're right, man. I left that because I couldn't support Trump, but I also left it because I got sick of the dishonesty. The business model in right-wing media, and I'm still a conservative, is to piss off your audience, to inflame them, and to lie to them. That's what Tucker Carlson does every night. That's what Hannity does every night. And that's what most conservative talk radio guys do, because that's where the money and the ratings are.
Joe, I broke into this business in 1997 under the tutelage of Glenn Beck. I remember when Glenn Beck was about as left as Glenn was about two steps from Antifa. He was so far left. In 1998, I watched Glenn leave Connecticut and go pursue conservative talk radio. He's a brilliant guy. He understands the game. He took right to it. I know for a fact that Glenn Beck does not believe the things that Glenn Beck says. And I don't know. Maybe my problem is I have integrity. But when Donald Trump showed up, I thought to myself, for the last couple of years, Joe, every time I met someone, they found out I was a Republican, I had to literally look them in the eyes and be like, yeah, I'm not one of the hateful kind. I felt like I had to put that out there. And then after Trump showed up, I thought, I can't do this anymore. I can't. I can't pretend. And it's sickening. And when I say to other Republicans, we need to fix our party, they don't see it that way. And that makes me sad.
Joe, you couldn't sell your soul. And let's be honest. In the age of Trump, to succeed in talk radio or right-wing media, you have to sell your soul. In my former life as a congressman, you know, most of these Republicans privately, they think the same way about Trump that I do, but they've sold their soul. They can't say that publicly because they want to get reelected. He's the leader of the party and the base is with him. They know that.
Yeah, that's a and that really is a problem. By the way, on the phone here with Joe Walsh, who's host of White Flag with Joe Walsh. He's a former candidate for president, a former congressman. And a guy who, and I remember this, Joe, because I moved away from the Republicans before you did. You and I follow each other on Twitter, and I was coming at you for like a solid year plus, and I'm not taking credit for it, but I saw you start to see it, and I thought, oh my God, man, I love Joe Walsh. This guy's great, and you've been so outspoken about it. You always say country over party. Like, that shouldn't even be something an American has to think about. So thank you for doing that. And I feel like, Joe, you've paid the price because, like you said, you were heard all over the country on stations everywhere. They don't want that. They don't want to hear anything that's not the Trump party line.
I lost everything. I lost my syndicated radio show. Fox News won't put me on. And I have no future. I can't get elected anywhere as a Republican anymore. But again, no woe is me. I couldn't live with myself like you, Joe. I couldn't live with myself. Jim Jordan and I used to be best friends when I was in Congress. I couldn't live with myself if I did what Jim Jordan did. I couldn't live with myself if I did what Sean Hannity did. I couldn't.
Yeah, I think this just comes down to people who have integrity. And I think when you start getting to that level, and I've never been nationally syndicated, so I don't know what that's like. But I know people that have done it, and I'm talking to a guy who has. For you to sacrifice that for the greater good, that should be so telling to your former constituents that this guy's lost everything. You know, I was just having a conversation, Joe, with someone the other day. The grabbing by the pussy thing. You know, the guy who really got nailed on that, the guy who suffered all the fallout on that, was Billy Bush. Trump. Billy Bush's career basically was derailed for like 3.5 years. He's now back on TV, but not like he used to be. That guy paid the price. Donald Trump gets to go to Washington, D.C. and live in that beautiful home.
And if Trump wants to run again, and I believe he does, he will get the Republican Party nomination and nobody will challenge him. And the Democrats have their issues right now. There's a 50-50 chance Trump could be president again.
That is a scary notion. Joe, we're going to take a quick break, do weather and traffic. We'll come right back. We're talking to Joe Walsh. former U.S. congressman and conservative talk radio host, no longer a Republican. We'll talk a little bit about that next here on WICC 600 AM and 107.3 FM. I'm Joe Aguirre in for Paul Pacelli on the line with former U.S. congressman and former presidential candidate, radio host Joe Walsh, who left the Republican Party. You can follow him on Twitter at Walsh Freedom. Joe, thanks so much for being here. I appreciate you sitting through the elements, as we call them in the biz.
Joe, it's really good to be with you, man. It's good to be with you.
It's nice to talk to somebody that gets me, and I feel like you do. I want to plug your podcast, White Flag with Joe Walsh. I love the title of it. Genius. Over the last couple episodes, Charlie Dent, Stephanie Grisham, and Ken Olin, Ken and you were buddies, different political views, but with Stephanie Grisham and Charlie Dent, also two people who were like, bah, what's going on here? I think we're seeing more people who are not loving the way things are going, or more people at least that can admit that Donald Trump was not a great president.
Joe, I don't think within the Republican Party, here's the weird thing about me, because I come from the base of the party, Trump supporters used to be my supporters. I still talk to them every day, hundreds of them every day. They're totally with Trump. Trump's hold on the party is stronger now than it was a year ago. I think outside that, Joe, yeah, I think a lot of people now know who Trump is. But here's the problem. And I supported Joe Biden, first Democrat I've ever supported. The Democrats have issues. Mm-hmm. Is Biden going to be able to run again? And if not Biden, who? Because Trump's going to run. They better have somebody who can punch people, figuratively speaking, and fight against Trump.
Is there anybody on the Democratic side that you see as being a, first of all, because I mean, for a while I thought Cuomo was going to be the guy, but that's out the window.
No.
That tough guy, New Yorker attitude, I thought maybe that could work. Is there, I don't even know who there is in the Democratic Party that jumps to mind where I think like, oh, that guy could go toe-to-toe with Trump. I don't see it.
No, maybe a 50-year-old Joe Biden would have been the guy. The Democrats, Joe, weirdly, for a long time, and it's getting worse, they're losing the working class vote. Working class white, black, and brown people are leaving the Democratic Party because the Democrats are so into like some wokeness and some issues that regular people don't care about. I need a Democrat who can talk to real people. I mean, working class people. And I don't know of a Democrat out there who can do that. I don't see it.
Yeah. So how likely is it that Donald Trump ends up back in the White House? And I'm thinking if the first 4 years went the way they did, where he literally listened to nobody around him, what will the next four be like? And also, I've tried to explain this to people because, you know, people want to just throw this whole Ukraine thing on Biden's lap. You know, Donald Trump undermining NATO for his entire term,
yeah,
certainly emboldened Vladimir Putin to think, carte blanche, I'll do whatever I want. The U.S. isn't in. How tough is NATO? How tough is the European Union? So people kind of, again, they just want to throw it all on Biden, and it seems like Democrats, by and large, Joe, are buying that whole thing.
It's utter bull crap. Donald Trump was Putin's puppet. Nobody was softer with Putin than Donald Trump. I mean, Putin literally could tell him to do whatever he wanted him to do. So that, I mean, throw that out. Look, I believe, Joe, and I've been saying it, and maybe you've been saying the same damn thing. I believe our democracy hangs by a thread.
Mm-hmm.
I believe the biggest threat to our democracy right now is this democracy denying Republican Party. If Trump is elected again, I'm scared to death what might happen to our country.
Joe, I had on a guy who's running in the 4th District for the Republican nomination against Congressman Jim Himes. And it's been a long time, as you probably know, since Connecticut sent any representation of the Republican kind to Washington, D.C. And more or less, I've again, in being on all week, I've had a chance to talk to some people. And I have sort of my reality test for a candidate, especially here in a state like Connecticut, which I've always felt was different. I thought being a Connecticut Republican would be different because I think you, like me, identify under that, like that Reagan conservative where, you know, Ronald Reagan was talking about a high high corporate tax rate. He was talking about cutting taxes for the poor, the working class, and the rich, but he didn't want citizens to be strapped with that burden. He also talked about, migrant workers coming in from Mexico. I remember 1980, him and George Bush were arguing about dual citizenship or some kind of pass where they could go back and forth. The Republican Party of Ronald Reagan is dead. It's gone. There's nothing left of it, and this is what remains. And, boy, is it hard to get behind this.
And Joe, every one of us, Republicans and former Republicans, did this. Tea Party people like me, Joe, I inflamed the base. So I helped radicalize them to get to Trump. The Republican Party establishment for way too long ignored the base. And then Trump came along in 16. He's a demagogue. He said, I'm going to build a wall. I'll keep brown and black people out. That was the end of it. All of us bear responsibility for it. I just think the party can't be saved anymore.
I really do agree with you. I it's unfortunate. I felt like a few years ago the Democrats were primed for a split between the progressives and, you know, the more established Democrats who are sometimes a little more of the conservative type. And for a long time, I really was hoping the same thing would happen for the Republican Party and that maybe they would have tried to time the split where these two could have broken into four. I think that right now, the way everybody's digging in, any chance of that ever happening is completely out the window. Not to make this all sound hopeless, Joe, but it feels that way a little bit.
Hey, Joe, look, you're all right, man. You're in good company. I'm a dark Irishman. I think we're in for a really bad time. Yeah. I think the Republican Party is dying as a national party. I think the Democratic Party is moving too far left. I actually do believe, Joe, that within the next 8 to 10 years, there is going to be a brand new major political party right there, center right, center left, because that's where most Americans are.
That's where I try to live. Joe Walsh, like I said, you can give this guy a follow on Twitter at Walsh Freedom. Make sure you check out his podcast. It's called White Flag with Joe Walsh. He has great guests. And if you've listened to this guy before, you know what a great broadcaster he is. Joe, I so appreciate the time and all your opinions. I'll continue to be checking out your podcast. And please keep up the good fight. I appreciate you, again, taking responsibility for what you created, but recognizing I don't want to destroy my country. I love it too much. So kudos to you for that, Joe.
Hey, Joe, an honor to be with you. Stay in touch. Let's you and I keep at this.
I love it. I'm much appreciated. Ladies and gentlemen, that was Joe Walsh, former congressman and former radio talk host. Nationally syndicated until he turned on Trump. Nobody wanted to hear it. Sad.